Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Hello, everyone. Hub Arkish, along with Jimmy Clemens and Mike Wilkening, bringing you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, where every week we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen from college basketball, the NBA, and the NFL as well.
We preview the opening of the NFL free agent market, plus an in-depth look at number one Syracuse.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Thank you, one and all, for tuning in to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. I am Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor, and I am joined, as I am each week during the basketball season, by our co-hosts, Jimmy Clemens, assistant coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, Mike Wilkening is a senior editor at PFW and Basketball News, and for our first couple segments, our favorite guest, we check in just about every week with the publisher of HoopsWorld.com, Steve Kyler, for the very best in NBA inside information, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You want to get to HoopsWorld.com, and Jimmy, let me start with you first. It has been a difficult week, I suspect, for Shaquille O'Neal. Not quite as difficult for the Cleveland Cavaliers. It will stretch them a little bit, force them to learn some things about their ball club. But the bottom line, surgery on the thumb for Shaq. He is out anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks. The best projection I'm hearing is at least the rest of the regular season. Not a sure thing for the playoffs. What, if anything, are you hearing about it, Jim? And what are your thoughts about what that does to the Cavs?
I've heard the same things that you've heard. 6 to 8 weeks. Maybe the first round of the playoffs, maybe a little bit later, depends upon how he heals. And I think that Cleveland obviously is concerned, but I think they have enough versatility with their roster now that they should be able to find their way through the maze, so to speak. I think that Anderson Varejao will probably start at the center spot, and then I think they'll do it by committee. They've got Leon Poe, who's been inactive most of the season due to some surgery that he had last year. He's coming back, and I think they can even go quote-unquote small. And then there's still the rumor out there after 30 days left that they're going to try and sign Ilgakas back. So I think they've got a plan. I think they're going to wait and see how they play these games, and then if Ilgakas is still available, they may make a run at him.
Steve, is it your take that, A, if Shaq can be close to 100%, at least by the second round of the playoffs, if not the first round, if he can stay in shape, which I think may be the bigger question, that this actually could play to the advantage of the Cavaliers?
Well, I think it does, because you get a couple of things. A, you get Shaquille, who needs the ball offensively, you know, out of the system for a little while, so you can work Anton Jameson into the mix. It also lets some of your other guys that probably aren't playing as many minutes get some minutes, especially minutes in the front court. When you're talking about guys like J.J. Hickson and Anderson Varejao, you know, those are going to be guys that, if Shaquille's healthy and Zydrunas Ilgauskas is in the fold, probably don't see nearly as many minutes. And I think that just makes your team better as you get into the postseason. I think it's going to make it tougher as you get into the postseason. And the thing is Shaquille was never going to be a 35-minute a game guy for Cleveland. He's going to be in there 20, 25 minutes, and I think he can do that in his sleep. So I'm not overly concerned about, you know, the weight issue, because Shaq's always been a little overweight in the back part of his career. I think for them, it's can they get Zydrunas Ilgauskas to commit? He's kind of been wavering here the last couple of days.
Mike Wilkening, of course, senior editor at Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. Explain for the audience, if you will, as quickly as you can, the specifics of LeBron James's decision to change his number and what he has to go through to accomplish it.
Well, he faced a deadline this week to change from number 23 to number 6 next season, the 2010-2011 season, supposing he stays in Cleveland. Now, he had to go through that paperwork, fill out go through that process to do that. And it's a multi-pronged sort of strategy for LeBron. Certainly showing respect to Michael Jordan, who obviously wore 23 famously. It goes to number 6, a number he wore in the Olympics. But obviously, from a business perspective, guys, certainly he's going to sell a lot of jerseys in the change here. Certainly it will be, I think, a profitable decision for all involved, supposing he wears this number 6 going forward. And obviously the most intriguing aspect of it is that he does this, he makes this move as, you know, we sort of look forward to this offseason where he's obviously the most coveted free agent of all time, and where he goes is obviously probably one of the greatest offseason storylines of all time in any sport.
Well, but Steve, as Wilkie points out, if he switches teams, he didn't need to do any of this. So all this chatter in Chicago and New Jersey, New York, Miami, oh, this means LeBron's coming here. It has nothing to do with that. It's really strictly about selling jerseys, isn't it?
Well, if you remember very early on in the season, he got up on the soapbox and announced that he thought the entire NBA should retire the number 23 and that no player should wear it again. And this is really LeBron putting his money where his mouth is in a lot of ways. You know, this is something that has been going on for a while, but, you know, we've all kind of read the storyline to be, oh, he's silently committing to the Cavaliers because that's the only team he needs to file this paperwork for. I think we're all overlooking the fact that he's also a free agent for Nike this summer, and they've got a lot of apparel and things that have that number 23 stitched on them. You know, he's making a lot of bold business moves before the summer comes, and I think all of this has to do with repositioning the LeBron brand. As Coach can tell you, you know, there used to be a guy that wore number 8 in L.A., and now he's 24, and you see a lot of those jerseys floating around. It's not a bad business move for whoever gets LeBron.
Well, and Jimmy, let me ask you very quickly, and we got to get to break. There was a pretty good ball player who wore number 6, too. You know, we've got LeBron allegedly honoring Michael Jordan. Does this dishonor Bill Russell in any way?
That's my whole thinking behind it, because if I were going to switch, I wouldn't switch to 6, you know, simply because the gentleman who wore number 6 for the Boston Celtics is arguably the all-time best player in the entire league, but hasn't received the credit and notification that he is so. So, you know, do you disrespect one by honoring the other or vice versa? You know, just go to number 0. Who knows?
All right, guys, let's take a very quick commercial break here. We got more NBA Way We Hear It coming up right around the bend after these quick commercial words. Welcome back, all. We continue to go around the NBA. Our guest, Steve Kyler, the publisher of HoopsWorld.com, the one website you want to visit 24/7 for the best in NBA insider news. I go first to my co-host, Jim Clemens, though, because you've got an interesting ball game on Sunday, Jim. Steve, of course, based in Orlando. You guys will be in South Florida late this week and then head to Central Florida to take on the ball club that surprisingly visited you in the finals last year. Your thoughts about where these two teams are at, the Orlando Magic and your Lakers right now?
There's no doubt behind it. We're going to face a wonderful challenge Sunday afternoon, and we look forward to it. They're going to be sky high. We're going to have to try and find some kryptonite for Superman and his cast of supporters, but I think, and I'm very hopeful that the ABC audience that watches on Sunday afternoon will get their money's worth.
Steve, are the Orlando Magic a better ball club today than they were at the end of the NBA season last year?
I think in some ways they are. Certainly Dwight Howard's development is better this year. I think he's a more rounded player offensively than he was in the finals last year. They certainly have a more veteran feel to him when you consider Vince Carter's in the mix. You've got guys like Matt Barnes that are contributing in a big way, backup guards like Jason Williams. They're a very veteran and experienced team. They struggled early in the season. I think nobody could doubt that, but really here in February, in the first part of March, they are absolutely rolling teams, and, you know, they are starting to look like the team that maybe Otis Smith thought they were going to be coming into camp, and right now they really look like a team that's poised to maybe come out of the East. So it's going to be a good test for Orlando to see really where they're at, because a lot of the moves that they made in the offseason were about countering what Jimmy's club can do. The Lakers are a long team. They're a team that's going to move year around in a lot of ways, and this is going to be the real test to see whether the $81.5 million that Orlando spending this year is going to pay any dividend.
Steve, a difficult subject to analyze, and I want to tiptoe around it so as not to offend anybody, but Allen Iverson apparently is through for the season. He left the 76ers a couple weeks ago. We were told to take care of his 4-year-old daughter, Messiah, who had been ill, an undisclosed health issue, and for that he has my undying respect. Of course, that has to be his first priority. We don't know a lot about the situation. We now get word that he is done for the season, that he is still caring for his daughter. He doesn't want to be a distraction to the ball club. We don't know what happens after this season to one of the NBA's all-time greats. And my hope is that there's nothing more to this story. Remember, the year got off to such a curious start, you know, in Memphis for a couple games, then he was gone. Any insight you can lend to this from what you're hearing from your sources?
Well, you know, I've talked to everybody involved in this discussion, and it is absolutely what it seems. And it's a tragedy because, you know, Allen does very much care about his children. That's, you know, his family is really everything to him. And I don't think there's any parent in the world that wants to hear that your child has a heart condition that they don't know a cause or a cure for. You know, and this is really a situation that's gone from bad to almost worse. She's been hospitalized for a long time. And I think that, you know, any parent in the world would struggle to focus on getting your shoes on right each morning, let alone play competitive basketball all over the country. I think it's admirable that the Sixers have done the right thing and said, Allen, look, you take as much time as you need. You know, and a lot of this is about the Sixers need that roster spot. They need to start bringing in some young talent because their roster is going nowhere and they're kind of, you know, handcuffed to a lot of those players. From what I've heard, Allen will be paid every penny that's owed him on his contract. They're not trying to save money letting him go. They may waive him to open the roster spot, but what I've been told is that if Allen wants to come back and be a 76er next season, the door is open. They'd love to have him. He was a model person in every way for them and a great influence on their young guys. And, you know, from Eddie Jordan, the head coach, to Ed Stefanski, their general manager, they've had nothing but great things to say about Allen. I really think a lot of times in the media we look to vilify him, and this is just a situation where he's done everything the right way and things just haven't lined up right for him.
Well, and I speak for all of us here at Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News when I say our thoughts and prayers are with Allen and his family. Jimmy Hasheem Thabeet is now a member of the Dakota Wizards. That'd be a ball club in the NBA D League. He was the second overall pick in the 2010 draft. He is the most highly drafted top prospect ever to play in the developmental league. He averaged just 2.5 points and 2.9 rebounds in 10 minutes in 50 games for the Grizzlies. Is this a positive? Can this be a positive? Or did the Grizzlies blow the second overall pick in the draft?
Well, I think it could be a positive. It should be a positive because obviously he's going to get more playing time, and with playing time is seasoning and understanding what it is to be a professional. And I hope he takes it as a stepping stone to better things to happen for him. The fact is, we played Memphis about 10 days ago and they didn't play him. In fact, he was sent down shortly thereafter, but they got a wonderful performance from their backup center, Habib, during that game, and obviously, you know, he's outplaying him, so why have a pick sitting around not knowing what to do and how to do it? Just send him down so he can get some playing time, get his body in shape, some seasoning, and then bring him back at the end of the year. I think it's a wonderful idea.
All right, gentlemen, we are out of time. We've got some college hoops to talk, so we want to give our thanks to Steve Kyler of HoopsWorld.com. We'll check in with Steve again next week. We take a quick commercial break here, and we move on and check with Rivals.com who's on the bubble, who's not, and what happens on Selection Sunday next week. We're back with more Hoops Talk, but it is time to head for the college game. I'm Hub Arkish, along with Jim Clemens and Mike Wilkening, and it is now our pleasure to welcome in Mike Hugan. And Mike is the college sports editor at Rivals.com. And Mike, with Selection Sunday a little over a week away, a couple of the smaller school tournaments starting this week, I'm guessing that this is kind of a busy time of the year for you.
Yeah, it's a fun time, too. I mean, I think the real March Madness comes in the first week of the conference tournaments because, like you said, it's the one-bid leagues. These smaller teams playing for their one moment in the sun, the opportunity to get crushed by a number one or number two seed in the first round of the tournament. But, you know, there's already been an upset. The Atlantic Sun, number one seed Lipscomb, has already lost. So, it should be a pretty fun, next 10 days of conference tournaments.
You know, Mike, I jumped on the website to do a little cheat sheet here, and I know where you're at right now. Your last eight clubs on the bubble, University of Alabama at Birmingham, St. Mary's, Mississippi State, Virginia Tech, Rhode Island. You got Notre Dame in at the moment, Utah State, Old Dominion. I'm guessing as a result of play this week that Notre Dame moved a notch ahead of Illinois. And, you know, one of those most visible bubble teams is the Illini. They get Wisconsin Sunday. Do they need a win to get into the tournament?
Yeah, I think so. I think if Illinois wants a at-large bid, they're going to have to beat Wisconsin. Illinois has a relatively nice Big Ten record. Problem was it was a front-loaded schedule with a lot of the league's weaker teams. They won those games, but once, for the most part, once they've gotten into conference play in terms of playing against the the league's good teams, they generally have come up short. And, you know, that, I think, you know, Dimitri McCamey has played well at times, but for the most part, this has been an inconsistent team. Tisdale and Davis have not been quite as productive or as dominating up front as they were expected to be. And I think there's a very real possibility that the Big Ten only gets four bids this year.
All right, Mike, in that vein, a couple of years ago, we came out with this catch-all phrase, body of work. Between the Big East and the Big 12, who has the best body of work and who you think is going to let the most teams in?
I think the Big East is better, a little bit better. I think Kansas is better, obviously, maybe than almost anybody in the country. But I would take Syracuse and Villanova over Kansas State, and I would add Georgetown and Pitt, I think, are better than Baylor. So I think the Big East could get eight bids, should get eight bids. Have been talking on the radio on another show with Bob Huggins and Jay Wright and Mike Bray, and they said, you know, the Big East got a – they all basically said the Big East got a bunch of hype last year and it was deserved. And everyone this year, they all said, was sort of sleeping on the Big East until recently when they realized how good this league is. Notre Dame has three wins in a row over top 50 teams, and that's without Luke Herangode. So Notre Dame's coming on, and I think Notre Dame right now is in great position to get the Big East's eighth bid.
Wilkie, I'm going to let you tee this next one up for Mike, because we've been talking the last couple of weeks about, everybody knows the Pac-10 is down, way down. We hear questions about the middle of the Big Ten, but I'm looking at the ACC, and I'm seeing a tournament with no North Carolina, and I realize Maryland's in, Georgia Tech is probably in, Virginia Tech, but even the ACC, Wilkie, it just seems like they're struggling.
I would agree with that. I think, you know, if you're an opponent from another Big Six league, you look at the ACC, am I scared in the NCAA tournament of any of these teams, even Duke? And I think the answer is no. Duke has Shire, obviously a very good player. Nolan Smith playing well. But Maryland with Grievous Vasquez. Maryland, though, is a different team away from home. I don't think anybody's afraid to play Virginia Tech. Clemson's very inconsistent. Florida State can't score. Wake Forest is in a free fall. Georgia Tech is underachieved. So I think, yeah, the ACC, you know, Duke's got a nice record overall and a great RPI. Maryland's coming on strong right now, but I think, I agree, I think the league as a whole is not nearly as good as it was expected to be.
We are visiting with Mike Hugan and the college sports editor at Rivals.com. And I'll tell you, folks, if you want the very best in college sports information, recruiting information, game action, whatever it may be, Rivals.com should be your first and only stop. And Mike, Jimmy and I were talking just before you joined us on the show. He's on the road. I was actually hosting a radio show last night. I had the monitor on in the studio without the sound, and I'm watching that Maryland-Duke game. It was at Maryland, as you point out, a different team at home. Grievous Vasquez, and I've been watching him for 3 years now. To me, sometimes it's almost a little over the top, and yet you talk about a guy who can pump up a ball club, an arena, a city. I mean, this kid, he can do it, and he showed me enough in that Duke game that I think he's going to be doing it in the NBA next year.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he'll be a superstar in the NBA, but I think he can play as a role guy or an eighth, ninth man for a while. And you're right, he does play with a lot of emotion. And I think if you don't like Maryland, you do think, well, this guy, you know, you need to stop Grievous and, you know, act like a normal player, that kind of stuff. But I think he plays better when he's emotionally up. I think the rest of his teammates feed off his emotion. He made some unbelievable baskets down the stretch. And his last one, I mean, I think he had to pray for like 30 seconds before that thing went in the basket. I mean, it was an unbelievable shot. But Maryland is playing really good basketball right now. Vasquez is the key guy again, though. I think If I'm a Maryland fan, I'm a little bit worried about what happens in the NCAA tournament because my team will not be playing at home, and Maryland just is not that good away from home this year.
All right, Jimmy, we were talking about it a minute ago. We'll see what Mike thinks in a minute. But Evan Turner, John Wall is one of the two, the National Player of the Year, and Jimmy, which one and why?
Well, I kind of lean toward the Wall kid simply because he's a first-year player. You know he's one and done. And I think that all the hype will and the media attention will go toward him. I think he'll be the sentimental favorite.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it would be hard to pick against John Wall. I think John Wall is more talented than Evan Turner. Kentucky's a better team than Ohio State, and Wall has been in the spotlight since probably the start of his high school senior season. I think, though, that there are a number of voters out there who will want to reward Evan Turner and not pick a freshman, though freshmen have been picked of late. Obviously, Durant, Michael Beasley got a lot of Player of the Year votes at K-State when he was there. But, yeah, I think those are, by far, the two guys that are going to be in the vote, in the mix, Wall and Turner. I think a couple guys in the office would vote for Wall. I think I right now would vote for Evan Turner. But I think Wall is going to win, and in the long run, Wall is going to be a better NBA player as well.
All right, guys, unfortunately we're out of time. My apologies to Mike Wilkening. We lost Wilkie on the computer. We'll have him back in just a moment. For Mike Hugan, and thank you so much for joining us. For all of our listeners, Rivals.com, the only place to go for your college basketball information. We take a quick commercial break, and we are back in just a moment. And we continue on with the college basketball story. And, folks, the story right now has got to be the number one-ranked Syracuse Orange. And with us to talk a bit about him is the longtime beat writer for the Post Standard up in Syracuse. Mike Waters has covered the team for a number of years. And, Mike, thank you so much for taking time out for us this weekend. And the place I have to start is, as good as this ball club is, I don't think anybody, including Jim Boeheim, could have thought at the start of the year that they were going to be this good.
Jim spent part of the offseason saying that they would be good and that they were better than where people were picking them. But even he in recent weeks has said, okay, even this is a little bit beyond what anybody would have thought. To lose your top three scorers, including the number six pick in last year's NBA draft, and to be number one in the country, you know, to not even be okay, but to be better is quite amazing.
Well, let's say it's 2 weeks from now, Mike, and you're in the finals of the Big East tournament. Which team in your league is going to give you the toughest game for that championship run?
Well, there's a lot of good teams in the Big East, and obviously Villanova and West Virginia are top 10 clubs. But I think the teams that actually can give Syracuse the biggest problem are teams like Pittsburgh and Louisville. Pittsburgh in particular, because they're very comfortable playing patiently, and which gives them the ability to attack the zone and work the ball around and get a good shot. They also are a physical team, both inside and out. Their guards, their forwards, and their big men, they will get in there, they will pound you on the boards. And that's what they did when they came up to the Carrier Dome in January and handed Syracuse its first loss of the season. And Louisville's the other team that's beaten them this year, and they played a similar game and held Syracuse to just 60 points. And they did so by controlling the pace, and you do that two ways, by working the ball on offense and also controlling the board.
Mike, I read something interesting this week where, you know, Jim Boeheim said that there's a real case for Andy Routens as the Big East Player of the Year. Do you agree with that? Who's the MVP of this team? And, you know, is it Routens? Is it Wes Johnson? I mean, who stands out to you as maybe the MVP of this team?
The MVP of Syracuse's team is Andy Routens, to me, hands down. And Wes Johnson might be the player of the year in the Big East, and actually probably wouldn't have been if it hadn't been for the injuries that have really hurt his numbers in the last four or five games. But beyond, you know, who's your leading scorer and who's going to be the first round pick in the NBA, the most valuable player of this team is far and away Andy Routens. He's the fifth year senior. He's unquestionably the team leader. He's really stepped in that role. He's a terrific defender in the zone. Much of what he does at the top of the zone, covering a lot of ground, he's got very long arms. He's got an incredible number of steals and deflections at the top of the zone. And he's really a big part of why the zone is really good this year. You know, his assist-to-turnover ratio is in the top 10 of the league. You know, I think he leads the Syracuse in steals. He's one of the top steals guys in the Big East, and that's while playing in a zone. Andy's the most valuable player on the team, and Wes Johnson might have been your player of the year in the Big East if it not been for the injuries. But because of those injuries, I think Scotty Reynolds of Villanova probably wins the player of the year award.
Well, and Mike, for those of us who have been caught a little bit by surprise by the Syracuse Orange, I think you got to come back to Johnson. You know, when you get a transfer from another, good basketball school, certainly a big-time basketball conference, you assume that there's reasons and maybe issues, and you certainly don't expect him to step in and become the Big East MVP. Did you ever imagine that Johnson could have this kind of impact on this ball club?
Well, I didn't when I wrote the stories that he was transferring to Syracuse 2 years ago. I had to look him up. I had to look up his numbers. I really was not aware of who this kid was because he had played on a kind of a mediocre team out at Iowa State and was a little bit off the radar here in the East. And, okay, he had good numbers, and he was probably going to be a nice guy to have coming into the program because they were going to lose Dante Green after that 1 year. And I think Jim Boeheim was preparing in case Paul Harris has left, as he did after last year. But when I watched Wes Johnson in practice last year, I began to realize Syracuse had really lucked into something here. They had found themselves a player. But, yeah, you know, normally this is not something Jim Boeheim does. Wes Johnson is only the fifth transfer from a four-year school that he's ever taken because, like you alluded to, usually those guys come with a little baggage, and Jim Boeheim's at a place where you don't have to mess around with that kind of kid.
Well, right now he is one of the best players on the number one team in the nation. We will see how they do come tournament time. I'm afraid we're out of time, but Mike Waters of the Post Standard, thank you so much for joining us. We also say goodbye to Jimmy Clemens. Jimmy will be back with us next week in the basketball portion of the show. Right now we move on. It is past the combine. It's free agency time this weekend. We talk NFL in just a moment. Hub Arkish back with more Pro Football Weekly and basketball news, and we make the transition now to the NFL because it is a busy time of the year in the National Football League. Used to be the off season, but now we have just wrapped up the NFL scouting combine, and at midnight Thursday Eastern time of this past week, free agency opened in an uncapped year, trying to figure out what clubs are doing, and we start with Associate Editor Dan Parr, who covers the AFC West, the Denver Broncos. Dan, everybody's been tendered. Doomerville with the highest tender offer. Elvis Doomerville will cost somebody a 1 and a 3 if they want to sign him. You've got first round tenders on Brandon Marshall and Kyle Orton and Chris Cooper, a second-round tender on Tony Scheffler, who basically was sat down at the end of the season. What are you hearing the Broncos really hope to do with all these players?
Well, it was interesting, the Marshall tender in particular. They could have given him the first and third. Very unlikely that a team would be willing to give up that package of picks for him. But when you just have a first-round tender on the guy, maybe there is a team out there like the Baltimore Ravens, maybe another team or two that could be willing to give up that pick. And, of course, the Broncos don't have to do that. They could trade Brandon Marshall. They could have him sign that tender, and they could trade him for the best offer they can find. So the first round is the going rate at this point, but I think if no team comes out and emerges as one that would be willing to do that, I think Denver could find a way to make a deal work in another way.
All right, Kyle Orton, Chris Cooper, nobody's giving up first-round picks for these guys. Even Tony Scheffler, nobody's going to give up a second-round pick for him. So obviously the Broncos really just protecting themselves there and making it clear to these players that they either take the one-year tender or they're better off signing a short-money, longer-term deal right now?
Yeah, well, what they can do is they can retract these tenders at some point. They're going to go ahead and do this just to protect themselves, as you say, to go out and if there is a team willing to give up a pick for any of these guys, they'd gladly take it. If not, they could try to work out a trade a different way with these guys after they sign these tenders. So they have some options. They just want to make sure that they don't get away for free. It could end up being that way with a guy like Scheffler that everyone knows Denver wants to get rid of. They might end up holding him out, and if Denver doesn't want him, they can just retract that tender and he can go sign with someone else. So it's going to be a lot of talks between the Broncos and other teams here as free agency gets going.
Dan, the Oakland Raiders, another team on your beat, and rumors around the league that they are dangling all-world cornerback Nnamdi Osunwa. Any chance that they actually are able to put together a trade? I know one of the reasons is he's going to cost them about $16 million this year to keep, but the contract goes with him in a trade. Is he tradable, and do you think they're serious about dealing him?
Well, in an uncapped year, you know, I guess he's tradable. I'm not sure how many teams would be willing to take that on. Not many, but with no cap, there's no preventing a team from taking on that big salary. It was very surprising Tom Gable was given an opportunity to knock down these rumors at the combine about Osunwa in particular, and he opted not to do that. He left the door open and said, well, you know, we have talks with everyone about every player. It still would be surprising, I think, if Osunwa was not on the team next year, although it is the Raiders. We never know what can happen. This is a great player. Probably their best player, maybe the best corner in one of the top couple corners in the league. The Jets have been mentioned as a possibility. They're going to cut Lito Shepard probably Friday. That's expectations are for that to happen. They're going to have a need for a new starting corner. Can you imagine Nnamdi Osunwa and Darrell Revis playing together? That would be a pretty formidable corner duo. So you know, I'm sure the Raiders will take some conversations pretty far with some of these teams. Whether a deal actually gets done, too early to say, but Nnamdi Asamoah definitely on the block.
Yeah, Asamoah with Darrell Revis would put that island somewhere in outer space, no question about that. Dan, thank you very much. We want to get back to senior editor Mike Wilkening, and Wilkie, in addition to his basketball duties, covers the AFC North, a few of the South teams, but it's the Cleveland Browns, Mike, I want to talk about for just a minute or so here. What is going to happen with the mess they've got at quarterback?
We know this much, Hub. They're going to settle on a starter, and they're going to settle on a starter fairly early in the process here. There's not going to be the quarterback competition that there was last year. As we taped this, there was a report in the Cleveland Plain Dealer that, you know, the Browns are active in trade talks, that the trademark might be something they look at in terms of adding a quarterback. Obviously, they have a decision to make on Derek Anderson sooner than later. He has a roster bonus due later this month. His future, I think, is tenuous in Cleveland. Brady Quinn might stick around, but he may have competition, or he may have someone that jumps over him. Again, they're going to come to a decision, I think, fairly quickly on what they're going to do at the position here, so he can learn this offense, which clearly is going to be influenced by Mike Holmgren, that West Coast offense in Cleveland.
All right, Wilkie, I'm going to have you stick around for a minute. We take a quick commercial break. More NFL way we hear it as free agency is upon us. We'll find out who's moving and who's not in just a moment. More NFL way we hear it from Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. All the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen. We will try to give you some of that right now as we bring in senior editor Eric Edholm, covers the NFC East and some of the NFC Central, but we want to talk East today, and specifically the Philadelphia Eagles. Eric, their name's popping up everywhere. First, let's talk about the guy sure to be the most expensive free agent in this year's free agency signing period. That'd be Julius Peppers, and we're hearing the front runners right now are the Chicago Bears and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, I mean, it makes some sense, Hub. You look back at, you know, history, and they've made some bold moves in free agency. Javon Kearse was obviously a similar type of player to Peppers, whom they went after hard, and, you know, that kind of came out of nowhere. I think people are a little more ready this time, and he certainly would fill a need. You know, he can play either side, and I think he would be a great bookend for Trent Cole. You watch that defensive line at the end of the year, Hub, and they looked worn down, you know, and pressure is so much of a crucial component of McDermott's defense that I think it makes a lot of sense. I will say that one guy they were after is now off the market with Darren Sproles re-signing with the, or excuse me, tendered at the first and third round level. That was a guy they had a visit plan with, so that either frees up some money for them to possibly spend on Peppers or possibly another running back.
You know, Eric, and again, rumors flying everywhere. I am one of the leaders of the camp that says that the Eagles would be absurd to part ways with Donovan McNabb. And yet, in spite of their denials as late as Thursday of this week, just prior to the free agency signing period starting, I keep hearing rumblings that McNabb could move to Arizona, Minnesota, can't really do anything waiting for Favre, but that there's a couple teams that the Eagles think they might be able to get to overpay.
I think if you're to read the situation that way, that there's one school of thought that makes a lot of sense because of the relationship that Andy Reid and McNabb have built up over the years. I think he's sort of allowing McNabb, if this is the theory you subscribe to, he's sort of allowing McNabb to sort of pick his destination if he is indeed going somewhere. And there's some support to go along with it, because they apparently are going to keep Michael Vick. They're going to keep him and pay him his roster bonus and plan to use him this season. And they still like Kevin Cobb. So it makes a lot of sense. You could understand that is a possibility.
All right, Eric, thank you very much. We want to have you hand the mic off to our executive editor, Dan Arkish. And Dan's also got some NFC North teams. He's got the NFC West. I think I said NFC Central. I can't even keep my division straight anymore. But, Dan, let's go back to Arizona, who we were just talking about. One player that they hope to keep, even though they released him on Thursday, is Antrell Roll. He was due a $4 million signing bonus and $4 million in base. They didn't feel they could pay him $8 million this year. They are trying to get him re-signed, but the minute he hits the free agency market, there are some teams desperate, and another one is a club you also cover, the Chicago Bears. What are you hearing there?
Yeah, he's going to have it's going to be interesting to see what happens there, Hub. I think he's going to have a fair amount of suitors, and, you know, I think the Cardinals, boy, if they lose both him and Carlos Dansby, which they're expected to do, I mean, that's two key defenders on a defense that really kind of fell apart in the playoffs. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens there.
And you know, it's curious, Dan, they're going to save about $11 to $12 million on Kurt Warner's retirement this year. why lose both players? I mean, I understand they still have to deal with Darnell Dockett. They spent a lot of money on Adrian Wilson, but it would seem strange that they would even risk losing both Dansby and Roll.
Well, you know, I guess one thing that they see with Roll is that if they're going to re-sign him, they probably are going to have to pay him as much as they paid Adrian Wilson, who is making $8 million a year annually, and that's a huge price for, quite frankly, a guy who, while he made the Pro Bowl and is a playmaker with a nose for the end zone, he's an unproven commodity. And so, I mean, as far as Dansby goes, Rod Graves at the Combine said they're still interested in trying to keep him, but I think he's looking for, you know, $30 million of guaranteed money, and, you know, it's just a lot of money, and the Cardinals do have other concerns with people like Darnell Dockett. I think he's number one on their list of guys that they need to take care of.
Dan, only about 30 seconds left, but I got to ask you, the Chicago Bears being portrayed as almost desperate to get better. They don't have picks in the first and second round. They fire Bobby DePaul, their director of pro personnel. They have not hired anybody. Jerry Angelo is denying the rumors that Tim Ruskell is going to be the guy, and yet they march into free agency perceived to be the biggest bidders for the top money guys. What's going on in Chicago?
Well, it really does seem. I mean, it makes a lot of sense that they would figure to be, you know, among the big movers and shakers, because they have no first or second round pick for the second straight year. And even though the front office is a little bit incomplete right now, everybody's talking about how it's quite conceivable they'll make a big play for Julius Peppers, maybe Antrell Roll, maybe Aaron Campman if Peppers goes off. And there's just a lot. I wouldn't be shocked if by the time people hear this show that they've gotten one of those guys.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. Guys, we've got one more commercial break to take, and then we are back with the Publisher's Pen in just a moment.
The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Mike, thank you very much, and I made reference to it a couple segments ago. Normally, we would just be launching into the off-season for the National Football League, and yet things have never been busier. As we tape the show, we are a couple hours short of the beginning of the free agency signing period, so a couple of players may have already signed by the time you hear this, but the real action, hot and heavy, is going to be over the weekend, the beginning of next week. We're going to see players moving, and the question is, what are the price tags? Nobody knows. There's no salary cap out there. Will anybody go hog wild? We hear about the Chicago Bears, the Philadelphia Eagles, a couple of older ball clubs with plenty of cap room who may need to make a move now before they have to turn over their rosters. Or will it be the usual suspects? Will Daniel Snyder go nuts in Washington? Will Jerry Jones jump in with both feet in Dallas? Or will the owners as a group say, let's save some money? This is free agency. It's exciting. We just have no idea which direction it's going in this year. That's going to do it for this week's show. Our thanks to Mike Waters of the Post-Standard, the Syracuse beat man who helped us out with the Syracuse Orange, Steve Kyler, the publisher of HoopsWorld.com, Mike Huguenin, the college sports editor from Rivals.com, Randy Myers is our engineer par excellence, our thanks to Syndication Networks, our home studio, and most of all, our thanks to all of you for listening. Be sure and join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.